Welcome, everyone, to the HB Global Employee Ownership podcast series. Just some quick housekeeping before we get started. We recognize that this podcast is available to the general public, but we just want to say that the views expressed in these communications are of Bob Whalen in the context of HB Global and may not be applicable to broader audiences. So today, we have a focus on leadership and the motivational model at HB Global. We're going to dive a little bit further into that today with Sal Baccio, Bob Whalen, and Stacey Baum. I'll pass it over to them to get started. Stacey, we'll start with you.
Thanks, Jamie. So today, Bob and Sal, I'm excited to talk to you a little bit around our motivational model at HB Global surrounding autonomy and how delegation plays a role in autonomy. So I'd love to hear your perspective. Bob, maybe if you want to kick it off with some thoughts around autonomy and delegation.
Yeah, maybe I'll start out by just, with a little explanation of how we got here. Back in 2010, 2011, 2012, we established a leadership series for our management team at HB McClure. And we did a 7-class series. And one of the things we focused on was what truly motivates employees, because there's a lot of misperceptions about what truly motivates people. And so we wanted to address that. And the basis for our model around motivation comes from Daniel Pink, who wrote a book called Drive. And basically there's three main things that motivate employees, and that is autonomy, mastery, and purpose. And so we spent a ton of time on this podcast talking about what the purpose of HB Global is and what we're trying to do and where's the focus. In future podcasts, we'll talk a little bit about mastery and what we're doing as an organization to try to put people in positions to master what they do. But the focus today is going to be about autonomy. And it's really been a cornerstone of what we talked about and what has made us different and what we've evolved into in being a company that acquires other companies. And we think the autonomy that we give the businesses that we acquire is a very important component of that. And so we just want to spend some time talking about how we want that to work within HB Global. And I also want to recognize, and one of the big reasons, that Sal's on the podcast with us is because he's made such a big impact on evolving that model from where it started to where it is today. And so we'll get into some of those things. But I think it's really important just to, this fits right into, one of those things that we're just trying to get a little bit better each day. And this model and focus on autonomy for all 2,000 of our employee owners, has really evolved over time. And I think has made us better as an organization, that we're going to spend some time really articulating what the model is and giving people information so they know what we're talking about when we talk about autonomy.
Thanks, Bob. That's very helpful. I think the background is really important for everyone to recognize that this isn't something new to HB Global. This is part of our foundation and also being a growth organization, something that we're always working to improve. So that's very helpful. I'm curious, Sal, from your perspective, how you've seen this evolve during your time with HB Global.
Oh, good question. One thing I'll say, we're still a brand new company. Bob bought HB McClure in 2009. And then I would say we became more of a roll-up strategy in 2013, 2014, Bob, with IT Landis.
2014.
So that's when we became two companies. And so really our growth model has been going in earnest for 10 years now, which is nothing, particularly when you think about, Bob's vision is for us to be a forever company, evergreen, multi-generational. So we're still in our infancy. And so I think it's important to note because the expectation for us is that we should be iterative and we should be evolving, particularly this early stage in our company.
Thank you. That's super important. I think it leads into how important autonomy is to the business, how important being a growth company and having an open mind is to our organization. So Bob, can you talk a little bit now about how autonomy ties to delegation and how we view that? You already touched on how we look to give autonomy to our divisions, but I think it's bigger than that. I think we're also looking for our division leadership to share autonomy within their companies.
Yeah, thanks, Stacey. I think that's absolutely correct. And so what we've tried to do is lay out a model of how it should work. And we're going to call it radical autonomy to give it, just a tagline so everybody knows what we're talking about. But I think the first point is that we believe autonomy should be pushed to the lowest level in the organization possible. So literally, the person that is working most closely with the customer should have the autonomy to do as much as possible. Certainly, there's decisions that affect multiple people or multiple departments or different areas of the company, that may need to move up the management ranks. But we're really trying to give people as much freedom to make the calls relative to what we do for our customers every day. And that's where it starts. And then the decision about where that autonomy rests needs to reside with the supervisor. Now, lots of times that can be done in a collaborative manner. So it's not to say there's never discussion that goes on about what decisions should be made, where in the organization. So it can be collaborative. But in the end, a supervisor is responsible for defining what decisions are in the purview of a position and which are not. And so, just to use Sal's position, for example, it's Sal's responsibility to define what decisions a division president has within their position to make. Now, they may, in fact, delegate some of those decisions to other people in their organizations as well. But it all starts with the supervisor delegating. And again, that can be a collaborative process. It doesn't have to be one where they just autocratically decide, but it does start there. And then I think the next stage is to give clarity of purpose and training relative to any decisions that are delegated. And this is one of the big things, that I think, Sal has brought to the process, really recognizing that you can't just delegate something if somebody doesn't have the training that they need to do it. While in fact, actually doing things sometimes is the training, but we need to recognize that and give a different level of grace to our employees, when they're in the position, when they're doing something, for the first time. And then I think next, you've got to clearly define what your goals and your deadlines, are for that. Again, can be a very collaborative process or one, where as a supervisor, you have to define what needs to happen. It depends on the situation, but certainly you want to lay that out and define them. And then the supervisor is the one responsible for evaluating those results, giving feedback, and determining if we were successful. And again, this is another area, where I think Sal has had a really positive impact, because at times, once we delegated certain tasks, we felt badly about holding people responsible, for the results. Because, we felt like we gave them the autonomy to do that. And, we just felt bad about when things didn't go well about holding them accountable. And I think that's a really big part in recognizing on the front end that it's a big part. You put all of those things together is really the process that we think of, as autonomy within HB Global.
Sal, do you want to share your thoughts on autonomy and delegation and some of the points Bob touched on regarding clarity and training?
Absolutely. And so first, to reiterate, we believe that delegation, and this is a quote from a book we've all read, delegation without clarity of purpose and training is delusion, meaning you're delusional if you think you can delegate and get the same results that you expect without first providing clarity of purpose to the delegee and training on the standard to get there. Just want to touch first on the clarity portion. You know, we believe there are three components to that, three steps that must be taken to provide clarity of purpose. You know, step one, you have to set the standard as a leader. I'll talk about each of these in a little bit more detail. Step two, you communicate the standard, you know, to your delegees. And step three, you hold the delegees accountable to the standard if it's not met. And so first, you know, with setting the standard, whenever we set a standard, whether it's for our safety expectations, our profit margin expectations, backlog expectations, we always first collaborate and talk with the entire team about what's a reasonable expectation, what's a reasonable standard to hold everyone accountable to. We get everyone's buy-in up and down the organization, or for those that are appropriate to give input. We believe that's important because the folks that are going to be eventually held accountable, we want them to have a voice in what the standard should be. We don't want to be the kind of an organization where leadership is setting a standard or expectations without getting the buy-in from the folks that have to produce the result. So that's step one. Step two is to communicate the standard. You know, and there have been various studies that for adults to learn, they have to hear something seven times. I think part of that is we're a bit skeptical. Bosses can be haphazard and say different things, and folks want to listen and make sure that their leaders are being consistent in their messaging before really buying in that this is important, right? So we have to consistently reinforce the standard once it's set. We also believe now that it must be in writing. You know, and now that we're, you know, 10 years into this, we're getting turnover within different levels of our team. And it's not enough just to rely on past practice for the standard. It has to be in writing and trained, or else the new person in the position will really have no idea what the spec or standard should be. So when you communicate, it should be in writing. It should be consistently enforced. And three, as Bob mentioned, you have to hold the team accountable to the standard. So once you set the expectation, you communicate it, there has to be accountability. And I think one thing, you know, Stacey, you asked about what's changed in the past 10 years. You know, one thing we're learning, accountability is not a bad thing and it's not a dirty word. So often our employees and teammates think of accountability as something that's negative or accusatory, and it's really not. And so we use the term debrief. We want to debrief what happened, which is approaching a situation with curiosity, not conviction. And we're curious as to why. So if we have a profit standard that we want to have an 8% profit margin at the end of the year, and we achieve a 6, we don't begin with from a position we're accusing our leaders of not doing sufficient actions to get that 8% results. It starts with curiosity. What happened? What assumptions weren't met? How can we help? How can we support better? What can we learn? Was the standard too high, et cetera? And that conversation and line of questioning, that is accountability. And that's how we do accountability at HP Mechanical Group.
That's really helpful, Sal. I think setting the standard and clearly outlining how we communicate our expectations and then accountability makes a lot of sense for our team. The debrief language is, I think, also really positive for us because it's not just about debriefing or talking about areas that we're not performing well in. You know, we have a lot of great things happening at the organization that, you know, we need to celebrate every day and learn why our results are positive and going in the direction we want to head. So I think also sharing that makes a big impact. So it's probably a good transition, Bob, just for you to talk a little bit more about clarity, how you view your role at HB Global in sharing communications and clearly communicating to the teams.
Yeah, well, I think we can, bring a really clear example in the standards we set for the financial part of our mission, which is to create value for employee owners. Sal can rattle off the top of the head how, off at the top of his head about how the mechanical group is being measured for their success financially. They have a target of 23% return on invested capital, which is the first target. How effectively, are we producing a return on our capital? Secondly, how effectively are we producing a return on all the labor of the business? We're looking to make 35 cents of operating profit, per labor dollar. And so Sal clearly knows that. And thirdly, we're trying to grow our operating profit by 5% a year over time. Those standards, Sal has directly pushed them to the division level, and all the division presidents know that they're held accountable, for those results at their business. Now, over the last couple of years, we didn't meet those standards, or at least we didn't meet all of those standards over the last 2 years. But we're blowing them out of the water this year. And I think it's a great example of while we weren't happy about not meeting the standards, it wasn't like the world came to an end. We were focused on what we had to do to improve them and get them to where, we wanted them to be. And I could not be more proud of the definitive changes that the organization has made as we've gone over the last couple years to improve those results. So there has been really, Sal talked about putting things in writing. They put things in writing about how we manage all of our contracts. And so we are doing that, on a day-to-day basis, getting a little bit better each day, but we have clear standards on, what's expected, and then we work to achieve them. And, as we sit here today, we're financially achieving everything we would hoped we would be achieving.
I think also you both mentioned putting things in writing. When the company first started, one of the first things that was put in writing was our mission. And it just ties to everything that we continue to focus on and work on of empowering our employees to make it a great place to work and to create value. It ties to everything we're talking about today, from autonomy to good results based on clear communication, setting goals, and measuring those goals and holding it accountable. Would either of you like to touch on some of your thoughts regarding the training piece of delegating and making sure our teams are clearly trained and have the skills and tools to be able to be successful in their roles?
Sure, I'll kick us off, Bob. So Stacy, first, as you know, we start from the premise that all of our employees and teammates want to succeed and do the best they can for the company. And so we start with that assumption. No one comes to work wanting to do a poor job. And so that's the presumption that we give. And so when a standard or expectation is not met, our first question is, did we provide clear expectation of the clear of the purpose to the employee? And second, did we provide the right training to the employee? Nine times out of 10, leadership does not provide the right training or clarity to the employee. And so it's our job to train the employee on the standard and explain the standard before we send them off to work. And as you know, Stacy, we debrief every single safety incident or material job write down in the org throughout the organization every month. And again, nine times out of 10, when a standard is not met, it's not because the employee is doing something maliciously. Often they were not provided the right training on how to use a ladder. That may sound silly, but it happens. There's a certain way to use a ladder in certain circumstances. And if we're not trained on how to use that ladder in a certain circumstance, that's what often leads, to the injury. And our goal is, Once a negative event happens once, we want to educate, you know, now we go back to the training. We want to train the rest of the organization so it doesn't happen again.
Stacy, can I just add that, you know, I think sometimes, you know, leaders and this podcast is really focused on leadership and how you lead people. I also think it's important to recognize that when you're selecting for a team, that you may in fact, you know, want to select based on certain skills that somebody will bring to your team to make it better. And, you know, this focus on, for example, on, you know, putting things in writing and really having standards that are there is something that I consciously did by who I selected. That is not a strength of mine. I will admit, Stacy, I had a big part about putting our mission in writing and doing that. But it's not exactly an overall strength of mine to make sure that we've documented, you know, everything that we need to do as a business, you know, so that you have it there for the future. But it was a very conscious decision that I've made around the selection of the people, you know, that support me and support the organization, that we would have people that are focused on that. That is a strength of Sal's, and it was a very conscious decision through the experience we had with Sal before he came to work for our organization, that that's a strength that he would bring. And really, the change that's happened over the last 5 years relative to those standards being in writing and being out there for people to see and understand, you know, has been quite remarkable. And so it's a combination of the training that goes into the people, but also, you know, selecting the right skills and you know, personality types for what they're going to bring to the business.
That's a great point, Bob. Very important for all of our leaders in the organizations to not just look to build their teams with people who think and act just like they do. I think having well-rounded teams really make us a stronger organization. It's also an area where all of our employees play a role. So we've talked about this before, that employees, no matter what job they're in, play a really important role within the organization. Part of that is your example with Sal being good at documenting, is that you didn't necessarily have to ask him to document. It's something that he naturally does well. He listened to your messaging and then took the initiative to talk over with you what he thought was important from those messages and how to document it and communicate it. So I think that's also something that we can take away for all of our employees, that back to empowering them, everyone has a voice here. And if you see something, say something, offer to help. We're all on a team together.
Couldn't agree more.
So, any other thoughts from you on communication from supervisors to employees and then vice versa? So from employees to supervisors, it is a two-way street on how we communicate with each other. And if you have questions, it's always better to be a little bit more open and not wait for somebody to communicate what you're wondering about.
Communication is a two-way street. I would say though that the burden is still on the leader, the supervisor. And so at the end of the day, if the message was not received, it's the leader or supervisor's responsibility to make sure it's received. And while it's true that the delegee, the employee, should be asking questions when he or she is not clear, the leader also has to provide, you know, I'm going to say psychological safety so that the employee does feel welcome and free to ask questions and is not intimidated. And so, you know, the leader or supervisor has to create that environment and that culture where the employee is free to ask questions and seek clarity of purpose when there's a communication. But 100%, communication is a two-way street. And we do not like when the employee repeatedly blames the supervisor for failing to communicate when he or she did have the ability to seek clarity and to ask questions.
Thanks, Sal. I think ultimately we can all agree today it is ultimately the leader's responsibility to be able to delegate, be able to make sure the employee understands the task, has the training, and then still be available for questions and ultimately to own the success or failure of that initiative. Bob, this might be a good time for you to share your story about feeling badly after delegating.
Yeah, I'm classic for this. I have really, I would call it almost a strength relative to delegating. It's because of my personality traits, it's never been hard for me to, delegate some responsibilities to people and allow them to run with it and, really learn and grow from that. The counter to that is oftentimes I've been unwilling to be really critical of individuals' results, relative to that delegation, because I felt like once I delegated it, I was in essence, accepting, what came out of that. And, sometimes it was really good and sometimes it was bad. It definitely allowed me to scale. So one of the keys to delegating is that you can just accomplish so much more as an organization. That think about if we were an organization where every decision, had to be, go through me. It just seems so ridiculous to even think about. But there are relatively big organizations, where the leader of the business, makes almost, all the decisions. But I think it's something, a couple of, this is something, that I think Sal has done very effectively just through the mechanism of creating clarity. It's really easy to hold people accountable. And then also, another leader in our organization, Eric Crawford, he made me understand that it's just not kind to not give feedback, to one of your employees when they haven't met the expectation that's been laid out or held them, accountable to do that. And so, depending on your view of the world, I think you can look at it, in the framework of kindness. It's just not kind to allow somebody to do work that's not up to standard, and not educate them, bring them along on what they need to do, and use it as an opportunity to re-clarify, what the expectations are. Because when push comes to shove, we have a mission that's not built around one individual person. It's built around a team of 2,000 employee owners and future owners for that matter. And so I think it's really important, that those of us that struggle with those, tough conversations and have it, we need to find some framework where we can do that and be effective. And I think the more rational and objective you can be, the better it's going to serve you.
Any other thoughts at this point, Sal, to add to the commentary today?
No, I think if we had one takeaway, and again, back to how we've grown as an organization, it's welcoming and leaning into accountability and not allowing that to be a dirty word or have a negative perception. Growth is a core value of ours, and the way we grow is through debriefing the results, understanding what went right, what went wrong, and learning from it. And so accountability is a tool to learn and grow, not one to shame and blame.
Excellent points. Bob, any other takeaways from your perspective today?
My one takeaway is I just think this is one of the things that makes HB Global really special. Not only do we actively work to get people to within our organization to take on responsibility and autonomy, for their decisions, But it's been core to our success in recognizing that the only way for us to scale is the organization that you need to do that better. And frankly, that just because you're more senior in the organization doesn't mean that you're in a better position to do certain things. You know, I like to say, you know, to the division presidents, you know, they're in a much better position to understand what they have to do for their customers than I am. And so I think when you recognize that, it really sets a standard through the organization that we ought to think about the decisions we make and where they're made, you know, consistently. And I think it makes HB Global different.
I agree. I think one recap for me just on the leadership aspect of what we look for and expect in our leaders throughout the organization, practice radical autonomy based on today's discussion and definition, live our core values of trust, team, grit, and growth, give more than you take. I think that's something special here at HB Global, and take actions and take risks. You never know how it's going to play out, but I think that that's something really important to our leaders to remember. And then ultimately, we ask all our leaders to remember that you're part of something bigger. It's about the whole.
What a great message to end on.
Thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you, Sal, Stacy, and Bob, for your time today. Really fabulous discussion. If anyone listening has questions for the team, you can feel free to email them to eopodcast@hb-global.com. And we look forward to seeing you in next month's Leadership Podcast. And have a great one.